You've seen them all over, every time you go into an urban area, but you've probably never thought about the psychology or the socioeconomic factors at play underneath. We are talking about informal footpaths or shortcuts, the man-made trails that cut across open lots and grassy fields. Illinois State University urban geographer Alec Foster has been studying these footpaths. He talks to WGLT's Ryan Denham about what can be learned right under your feet.
Well, we refer to them as desire lines because the idea is that they indicate a desire of somewhere that people wish to go, a way that they travel across urban landscapes, urban fabrics that hasn't been provided by planners, transportation engineers, and the like.
How much time does it take for a desire line, a pathway to form? Is it something that can form quickly? Does it take years?
It really depends somewhat upon the medium. You know, so if it's just grass, it's obviously going to take repeated footsteps. I don't think that there's cases where someone just moves through once and then there's a desire line created. And we definitely saw this out in the field where some are just kind of these flattened traces where you can kind of see it, and where others are these wide kind of paths where the vegetation has been completely worn down and you kind of have a bare ground.
Now, we will be talking about some research that you did on desire lines in Detroit, but just so our listeners can kind of get their heads around what these things are, can you think of any kind of famous examples out in the world that people might have seen, like in a famous photograph or a famous location, where there's like a pretty well-known version of one of these traipsing across somewhere?
Everyone has seen them. They're kind of these ubiquitous elements of cities, and they're not something that we necessarily pay that much attention to or even really kind of notice and catalog in our minds. I know living for 5 years in North Philadelphia, I saw them every day. Sometimes I even took them as shortcuts to get across vacant lots, but I never really thought that much about them until I started doing this research in Detroit and really came to understand how they can tell us so much about cities, their planning, their construction, how they work, and how the residents get around them.
Does the emergence of a footpath, a desire line like this, does it necessarily mean that something was poorly planned, that the planners screwed up something, or could it mean something else?
It really depends. I think in some cases it does indicate either poor planning, depending upon, you know, if they're not necessarily consulting the residents, not trying to understand what their needs and their desires are. But then there's other cases where we saw where there's just kind of the public infrastructure is crumbling, where they're, you know, the sidewalks are cracked and maybe hazardous. They might even be kind of completely overgrown and impassable, or not even present in some neighborhoods. So pedestrians, residents are creating their own paths for where they need to go. Some people even argue that planners should wait for this to happen before they create the kind of formal paved sidewalks and paths, that the best way to kind of get an idea of how residents want to move through an area is to let them do that with kind of this blank slate.
And it seems like what this is kind of playing out on the Illinois State University campus. I think of the Quad, which is, you know, this giant green space in the middle of ISU's campus. It's got these kind of crisscrossing sidewalks that are diagonally cutting across a giant rectangle. And, you know, is that a version of desire lines sort of being codified and made official by campus?
I think so. I think anytime you have this large of a space, over time people are going to figure out, whether it's for efficiency or for curiosity, figure out alternative ways. And sometimes officials and planners will kind of resist those desires. If you spend a little bit of time browsing, you'll see lots of pictures. And I'm sure you've probably seen a bunch of signs moving throughout the cities where there'll be, you know, do not walk on grass. People even kind of chain off some of these desire lines as they're forming and kind of try to shepherd pedestrians back to the formal paths.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm speaking with Alec Foster, an assistant professor of geography at Illinois State University, and his research into those informal footpaths, so shortcuts, and also called desire lines that we see popping up all over. So, Alec, how do these footpaths, these desire lines, as you call them, How can they reflect like social issues within a neighborhood, within a community?
I think it's most stark in my research in Detroit, where we're looking at these neighborhoods on the Lower East Side of the city that are some of the most vacant in the city, and really some of the most vacant in the country, where there's over half, some of the census tracts, it's over 50% vacant land. You see blocks with only one or two remaining houses. And of course, that results in kind of a reduction in the city services that they're able to provide to those areas. So there are areas that are kind of marginalized, where there's poor transportation infrastructure. They don't necessarily get very frequent bus service. There's very, as you would imagine, very low levels of income, high levels of poverty. Only about a third of the households actually own a vehicle. As I was saying, there's often even kind of cracked or missing or non-existent sidewalks. So you can see them as a reflection of residents kind of trying to make their way in the face of this marginalization, to kind of figure out how to make it to work, to school, to kind of get the necessities of daily life, kind of trying to chart their way across the city.
Does that mean the inverse of that would be true, that in very wealthy neighborhoods, communities, these sort of desire lines, these pathways are less likely to pop up over time?
I would say probably. I think a large percent of it, and we kind of did some very basic statistical models to determine how you could predict the presence of desire lines. And really, as you would kind of expect, the strongest predictor was the percentage of vacant land in a neighborhood where there's areas for desire lines to be created.
So there are a couple of ways for, I imagine, a municipality or a college campus to deal with desire lines and these footpaths as they develop, right? They could make them official at some point and pave over them, turn it into an official sidewalk, and just call it a day. I imagine there's ways to push back on them too. If they don't want people doing that, they can put up fencing and everything. Can you talk a little bit about how government, local governments respond when these things come up?
Sure. There's kind of two sides to it, where some people feel like kind of the formalization like loses some of the specialization of the desire lines, where there's this kind of maybe romantic idealization of them as these kind of informal footpaths. And once they've been kind of sanctioned by the state, then they lose their charm. And I think that that's, while there may be some truth to that, it's also somewhat idealistic, where residents are using these.
You could think of it the opposite too, like, look at this thing we created, and now it's been officially accepted. You know, this is we made the government build a sidewalk here just by walking on this space.
Yeah, you can see it as residents kind of expressing their desires and maybe even their demands with their feet, and kind of writing a message on the ground in the urban fabric. And then if it's, you know, sanctioning their desires. And part of the reason why we kind of wanted, this is part of a larger research project on Detroit, is that there's so many plans, so many ideas, so many people coming in to kind of try to figure out how to revitalize or reimagine or redevelop Detroit. We think that this is a way of actually going out and talking to and listening to residents and seeing what's happening in these neighborhoods, that their voices can actually be heard, and that you can have a much more kind of inclusive process of reimagining Detroit, rather than having it kind of be some outside experts who think that they know the way to do it.
And who did you work with on research in Detroit?
Sure. This was part of my postdoctoral research at the University of Michigan with this now associate professor Joshua Newell, part of kind of a larger project working throughout the years with residents and nonprofits in the Lower East Side of Detroit, kind of looking at vacant land use practices and how they're perceived by residents. So both this recent piece on desire lines and then also another project looking at urban agriculture in the region.
What years approximately were you guys focusing on?
So what we did a time series analysis. The initial one was for 2010 for the whole entire city of Detroit, all 142 square miles. And we analyzed aerial imagery to catalog and basically do a census of all the desire lines that were present in the city in 2010. And we found 5,680 that totaled more than 150 miles in length. 2016, we just looked at a smaller portion of the city, the Lower East Side neighborhood, which is about 14 square miles, and once again did a census of desire lines for that neighborhood, and then compare the two neighborhoods from 2010 to 2016 to kind of see how they had changed over time. Just 6 years, the neighborhood saw a really rapid decrease in the number of desire lines. Almost 70% were gone. And there's kind of two processes that we found that led to that disappearance of desire lines, where one is kind of increased stewardship and maintenance and care of the properties that it was on, whether it's fencing or mowing or something else. And then on kind of the other side of the scale, we also saw a great deal of desire lines lost on properties that became kind of more overgrown, whereas heavy weeds, even trees and shrubs, that kind of made them impassable.
So some of the same forces that led to a desire line being created eventually overwhelmed that very thing, that very desire line?
You could say that, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's different reasons for them kind of either being abandoned or kind of overtaken by overgrowth, which is another thing that we found. We found that some of the residents that we interviewed didn't really like having them in our neighborhood, and largely because they felt like they weren't safe because of that kind of overgrowth. It was often kind of a line of sight thing where, you know, you go in there and you were no longer visible. People worried about children being in there. And
how did you get interested in footpaths? This is a very significant amount of research you've done in a pretty niche area. This is not an area of research I've heard much about before encountering you. How did you get interested in this stuff?
It is kind of an esoteric topic, and we're hoping that it gets people excited and gets more people interested in desire lines. But thinking kind of as an urban geographer, this issue of mobility is such a huge one for us. How do people get from point to point in across the city? And it's especially an issue in places like Detroit that might not have the funds dedicated to develop the best public transportation system, where residents might have low levels of access to vehicles. Then also the kind of high levels of vacancy. There's also a lot of commercial vacancy, so these people might not necessarily have access to the needs of daily life. Whether it's food, doctors, social services, they generally have to travel much further to access those services than even people in the kind of suburban areas around Detroit, because so many of the commercial enterprises have kind of left the neighborhoods of the city.
Well, obviously these things can kind of pop up anywhere. I mean, do you find yourself like driving around Bloomington Normal or walking around town and you're like, you see one starting to form, you're like, aha, there's going to be another one there.
It is something that, you know, spending that much time thinking about it, writing about it, looking at them in aerial imagery and walking them in the city, where it'll be a long time before I don't kind of see that as something, one of the first things that I notice when I kind of move through a new area.
That's Alec Foster, an assistant professor of geography at Illinois State University, and his research into those informal footpaths, so shortcuts called desire lines that we see popping up all over. I'm Ryan Denham.
If you want to see an example of a footpath made official, look at the small hill outside Watterson Towers near Illinois State University. After years of traipsing over the grass, ISU planners recently decided to pave the path.